Baby, look me in
the eye. No, you know me.
Baby, you set a chill down that way. Baby, look me in
the eye. No, you know
me. Baby, you set a chill down that way.
Waikiki Beach. I kicked off my shoes and threw away my sock and got my kicks doing Hawaiian rock.
Hockey, lottie, 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 da. Hockey, lottie, da. Hockey, lottie, lottie, da. Hockey, lottie, da. Hockey, lottie, lottie, da. Hockey, lottie, da. Hockey, lottie, lottie, lottie.
Well, a pretty little flirt in a hula hula skirt said, come to my hut and you don't have to knock. I teach you to dance the Hawaiian rock.
Hockey, lottie, 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 da.
I hit a pineapple flip when she started to sway. A rocket and a rolling like a ship in the bay. I said, oh baby, you're a Lulu from Honolulu. We could have a ball in the USA. A cool steel guitar was heard from afar as we hopped the ship that was down at the dock. And all the way back we did the Hawaiian rock. I hit a pineapple flipper when she started to sway. A rocket and a rolling like a ship in the bay. I said, oh baby, you're a Lulu from Honolulu. We could have a ball in the USA. A cool steel guitar was heard from afar as we hopped the ship that was down at the dock. And all the way back we did the Hawaiian rock.
Hockey, wadi, ladi, ladi, da. Hoopie, ladi, da. Hockey, wadi, ladi, da.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Primary Phase.
This is the story of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. More popular than the Celestial Home Care Omnibus, better selling than 53 More Things to Do in Zero Gravity, and more controversial than Ulan Khaloufid's trilogy of philosophical blockbusters, Where God Went Wrong, Some More of God's Greatest Mistakes, and Who Is This God Person Anyway? And in many of the more relaxed civilizations on the outer eastern rim of the galaxy, The Hitchhiker's Guide has already supplanted the great Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom, because although it has many omissions, contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, it scores over the older, more pedestrian work in two important ways. First, it is slightly cheaper, and second, it has the words "Don't Panic" inscribed in large, friendly letters on the cover. To tell the story of the book, it's best to tell the story of some of the minds behind it. A human from the planet Earth was one of them, though as our story opens, he no more knows his destiny than a tea leaf knows the history of the East India Company. His name is Arthur Dent. He is a 6-foot-tall ape descendant, and someone is trying to drive a bypass through his home.
Come off it, Mr. Dent. You can't win, you know. Look, there's no point in lying down in the path of progress.
I've gone off the idea of progress. It's overrated.
But you must realise that you can't lie in front of the bulldozers indefinitely.
I'm game. We'll see who rusts first.
I'm afraid you're going to have to accept it. This bypass has got to be built, and it is going to be built. Nothing you can say or do...
Why has it got to be built?
What do you mean, why has it got to be built? It is a bypass. You've got to build bypasses.
Didn't anyone consider the alternatives?
There aren't any alternatives. Look, you were quite in time to make any suggestions or protests at the appropriate time.
Appropriate time?
Yes.
The first I knew about it was when a workman arrived at the door yesterday.
Oh.
I asked him if he'd come to clean the windows, and he said he'd come to demolish the house. He didn't tell me straight away, of course. No. First he wiped a couple of windows and charged me a fiver. Then he told me...
But, Mr. Dent, the plans have been available in the planning office for the last 9 months.
Yes. I went round to find them yesterday afternoon. You hadn't exactly gone out of your way to call much attention to them, had you? I mean, like actually telling anybody or anything.
The plans were on display.
And how many average members of the public are in the habit of casually dropping around at the local planning office of an evening? It's not exactly a noted social venue, is it? And even if you had popped in on the off chance that some raving bureaucrat wanted to knock your house down, the plans weren't immediately obvious to the eye, were they?
That depends where you were looking.
I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights had probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Well, you found the notice, didn't you?
Yes. It was on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet, stuck in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, "Beware of the leopard." Ever thought of going into advertising?
It's not as if it's a particularly nice house, anyway.
I happen rather to like it.
Mr. Dent!
Yes, hello.
Have you any idea how much damage that bulldozer would suffer if I just let it roll straight over you?
How much?
None at all.
By a strange coincidence, none at all is exactly how much suspicion the ape descendant Arthur Dent had that one of his closest friends was not descended from an ape, but was in fact from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse. Arthur Dent's failure to suspect this reflects the care with which his friend blended himself into human society, after a fairly shaky start. When he first arrived 15 years ago, the minimal research he had done suggested to him that the name Ford Prefect would be nicely and conspicuous. He will enter our story in 35 seconds and say, "Hello, Arthur." The ape descendant will greet him in return, but in deference to a million years of evolution, he will not attempt to pick fleas off him. Earthmen are not proud of their ancestors and never invite them round to dinner.
Hello, Arthur.
Ford, hi, how are you?
Fine, look, are you busy?
Well, I've just got this bulldozer to lie in front of, otherwise, no, not especially.
There's a pub down the road. Let's have a drink and we can talk.
Don't you understand?
Mr. Dent, we're waiting!
Ford, that man wants to knock my house down.
Well, he can do it whilst you're away, can't he?
But I don't want him to.
Well, just ask him to wait till you get back.
Ford!
Arthur, will you please just listen to me? I'm not fooling. I've got to tell you the most important thing you've ever heard. I've got to tell you now, and I've got to tell you in that pub there.
Why?
Because you're going to need a very stiff drink. Now, just trust me.
I'll see what I can do. It had better be good. Hello, Mr. Prosser?
Yes, Mr. Dent. Have you come to your senses yet?
Well, can we just assume for a moment that I haven't?
Well?
And that I'm going to be staying put here till you go away.
So?
So you're going to be standing around all day doing nothing?
Could be.
Well, if you're resigned to standing around doing nothing all day, you don't actually need me here all the time, do you?
No. Not as such.
So if you can just take it as read that I'm actually here, I could just slip off down to the pub for half an hour. How does that sound?
That sounds, very reasonable, I think, Mr. Dent. I'm sure we don't actually need you there for the whole time. We can just, hold up our end of the confrontation.
And if you want to pop off for a bit later on, I can always cover for you in return.
Oh, thank you. Yes, yes, oh, that'll be fine. Yes, very kind of you, Mr. Dent, very kind.
And, of course, it goes without saying that you don't try and knock my house over while I'm away.
Oh, what? Good Lord! No, Mr. Dent!
Do you think we can trust him?
Myself, I'd trust him to the end of the earth.
Yes, but how far's that?
About 12 minutes away. Come on, I need a drink.
By drink, Ford Prefect meant alcohol. The Encyclopaedia Galactica describes alcohol as a colourless, volatile liquid formed by the fermentation of sugars, and also notes its intoxicating effect on certain carbon-based life forms. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy also mentions alcohol. It says that the best drink in existence is the Pan-Galactic Gargle Blaster, the effect of which is like having your brain smashed out with a slice of lemon wrapped round a large gold brick. The guide also tells you on which planets the best Pan-Galactic Gargle Blasters are mixed, how much you can expect to pay for one, and what voluntary organizations exist to help you rehabilitate.
6 pints of bitter, and quickly, please, the world's about to end.
Oh, yes, sir. Nice weather for it. Want to watch the match this afternoon, sir?
No, no point.
Foregone conclusion, you reckon, sir? Arsenal without a chance?
No, it's just that the world's going to end.
Oh, yes, sir, you said. Lucky escape for Arsenal if it did.
No, not really.
There you are, sir. 6 points.
Keep the change.
What, from a fiver? Thank you, sir.
You've got 10 minutes left to spend it.
Ford, would you please tell me what the hell is going on?
Drink up. You've got 3 pints to get through.
3 at lunchtime?
Time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so. Oh,
very deep. You should send that into the Reader's Digest. They've got a page for people like you.
Drink up?
Why 3 pints?
Muscle relaxant. You'll need it.
Did I do something wrong today, or has the world always been like this, and I've been too wrapped up in myself to notice?
All right, I'll try to explain. How long have we known each other, Arthur?
Oh, 5 years, maybe 6. Most of it seemed to make some kind of sense at the time.
All right. How would you react if I said that I'm not from Guildford after all, but from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse?
I don't know. Why, do you think it's the sort of thing you're likely to say?
Drink up. The world's about to end.
This must be Thursday. I never could get the hang of Thursdays.
On this particular Thursday, something was moving quietly through the ionosphere miles above the surface of the planet. But few people on the surface of the planet were aware of it. One of the 6,000 million people who hadn't glanced into the ionosphere recently was called Lady Cynthia Fitzmilton. She was, at that moment, standing in front of Arthur Dent's house in Cottington. Many of those listening to her speech would probably have experienced great satisfaction to know that in 4 minutes' time she would evaporate into a whiff of hydrogen, ozone and carbon monoxide. However, when the moment came, they would hardly notice because they would be too busy evaporating themselves.
I have been asked to come here to say a few words to mark the beginning of work on the very splendid and worthwhile New Bevingford bypass.
Get off!
And I must say immediately what a great honour and a great privilege I think it must be for you, the people of Cottington, to have this gleaming new motorway going through your cruddy little village. I'm sorry, your little country village of cruddy Cottington. I know how proud you must feel at this moment to know that your obscure and unsung hamlet will now arise reborn as the very splendid and worthwhile Cottington Service Station. Providing welcome refreshment and sanitary relief for every weary traveller on his way.
Why don't you push off, you cunt-faced old bat?
And for myself, it gives me great pleasure to take this bottle of very splendid and worthwhile champagne and break it against the noble prow of this very splendid and worthwhile yellow bulldozer.
They haven't started yet.
Oh, good.
It's probably just your house being knocked down.
What?
It hardly makes any difference at this stage.
My God, it is. What the hell are they doing? We had an agreement.
Let them have their fun.
Damn you and your fairy stories. They're smashing up my home. Stop, you vandals, you home breakers, you half-faced Visigoths. Stop!
Arthur, come back. It's pointless. Hell, I'd better go after him. Barman, quickly, can you just give me 4 packets of peanuts?
Certainly, sir. There you are. 28 pence.
Keep the change.
Are you serious, sir? I mean, do you really think the world's going to end this afternoon?
Yes, in just over 1 minute and 35 seconds.
Well, isn't there anything we can do?
No, nothing.
Well, I always thought we were meant to lie down or put a paper bag over our head or something.
If you like, yes.
Well, without help?
No. Excuse me, I've got to find my friend.
Oh, well then. Last orders, please.
You pinstripe barbarians, I'll sue the council for every penny it's got. I'll have you hung and drawn and quartered and whipped and boiled, and then I'll chop you up into little bits until you've had enough.
Arthur, don't bother. There isn't time. Get over here. There's only 10 seconds left.
And then I'll do it some more. And when I finish, I'll take all the little bits and I'll jump on them. And I'll carry on jumping on them until I get blisters. Or I can think of something even more unpleasant to do. And then I'll...
What the hell's that?
Arthur, quick, over here.
What the hell is it?
It's a fleet of flying saucers. What do you think it is? Quick, you've got to get hold of this rock.
What do you mean, flying saucers?
Just that. It's a Vogon Constructor fleet.
A what?
A Vogon Constructor fleet. I picked up news of their arrival a few hours ago on my sub-ether radio.
Ford, I don't think I can cope with any more of this. I think I'll just go and have a little lie down somewhere.
No, just stay here. Keep calm. And just take hold of this...
People of Earth, your attention, please. This is Prostatnik Vogon Jeltz of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council. As you will no doubt be aware, the plans for the development of the outlying regions of the western spiral arm of the galaxy require the building of a hyperspace express route through your star system. And, regrettably, your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition. The process will take slightly less than 2 of your Earth minutes. Thank you very much. There's no point in acting all surprised about it. All the planning charts and demolition orders have been on display at your local planning department in Alpha Centauri for 50 of your Earth years, so you've had plenty of time to lodge any formal complaints, and it's far too late to start making a fuss about it now. What do you mean you've never been to Alpha Centauri? Oh, for heaven's sake, mankind, it's only 4 light years away, you know. I'm sorry, but if you can't be bothered to take an interest in local affairs, that's your own lookout. Energize the demolition beams. God, I don't know. Apathetic bloody planet. I've no sympathy at all.
Some peanuts.
What?
If you've never been through a matter transference beam before, you've probably lost some salt and protein. The beer you had should have cushioned your system a bit. How are you feeling?
Like a military academy. Bits of me keep on passing out. If I asked you where the hell we were, would I regret it?
We're safe.
Oh, good.
We're in a small galley cabin in one of the spaceships of the Vogon Constructor Fleet.
Ah, this is obviously some strange usage of the word safe that I wasn't previously aware of.
I'll have a look for the light.
All right. How did we get here?
We hitched a lift.
Excuse me, are you trying to tell me that we just stuck out our thumbs and some bug-eyed monster stuck his head out and said, "Hi, fellas, hop right in. I can take you as far as the Basingstoke roundabout."
Well, the thumb's an electronic sub-ether device. The roundabout's at Barnard Star, 6 light-years away. But otherwise, that's more or less right.
And the bug-eyed monster?
It's green, yes.
Fine. When can I go home?
You can't. Ah, I found the light.
Good grief. Is this really the interior of a flying saucer?
It certainly is. What do you think?
Well, it's a bit squalid, isn't it?
What did you expect?
Well, I don't know. Gleaming control panels, flashing lights, computer screens. Not old mattresses.
These are the Dentressi sleeping quarters.
I thought you said they were called Vogons or something.
The Vogons run the ship. The Dentressi are the cooks. They let us on board.
I'm confused.
Here, have a look at this.
What is it?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a sort of electronic book. It'll tell you everything you want to know. That's its job.
I like the cover. Don't panic. It's the first helpful or intelligible thing anybody said to me all day.
That's why it sells so well. Here, press this button and the screen will give you the index. You've got several million entries, so fast wind through the index to V. There you are, Vogon Constructor Fleets. Enter that code on the tabulator and read what it says.
Vogon Constructor Fleets. Here is what to do if you want to get a lift from a Vogon. Forget it. They're one of the most unpleasant races in the galaxy. Not actually evil, but bad-tempered, bureaucratic, vicious, and callous. They wouldn't even lift a finger to save their own grandmothers from the ravenous bug-blatter beast of Tral. Without orders signed in triplicate, sent in, sent back, queried, lost, found, subjected to public inquiry, lost again, and finally buried in soft peat for 3 months and recycled as firelighters. The best way to get a drink out of a Vogon is stick your finger down his throat, and the best way to irritate him is to feed his grandmother to the ravenous bug-blatter beast of Tral.
Strange book. How did we get a lift, then?
Well, that's the point. It's out of date now. I'm doing the field research for the new revised edition of the guide. So, for instance, I will have to include a revision pointing out that since the Vogons have made so much money being professionally unpleasant, they can now afford to employ Dentrassi cooks, which gives us a rather useful little loophole.
Who are the Dentrassi?
The best cooks and the best drinks mixers, and they don't give a wet slap about anything else. And they will always help hitchhikers on board, partly because they like the company, but mostly because it annoys the Vogons. Which is exactly the sort of thing you need to know if you're an impoverished hitchhiker trying to see the marvels of the galaxy for less than 30 Altarian dollars a day. And that's my job. Fun, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Unfortunately, I got stuck on the Earth for rather longer than I intended. I came for a week and was stranded for 15 years.
But how did you get there in the first place?
Oh, easy. I got a lift with a teaser. You don't know what a teaser is. I'll tell you. Teasers are usually rich kids with nothing to do. They cruise around looking for planets which haven't made interstellar contact yet and buzz them.
Oh, buzz them?
Yes, they find some isolated spot with very few people around, then land right by some poor unsuspecting soul whom no one's ever going to believe, and then strut up and down in front of him wearing silly antennae on their head and making beep-beep noises. Rather childish, really.
Ford, I don't know if this sounds like a silly question, but what am I doing here?
Well, you know that. I rescued you from the Earth.
And what has happened to the Earth?
It's been disintegrated.
Has it?
Yes, it just boiled away into space.
Look, I'm a bit upset about that.
Yes, I can understand.
So, what do I do?
You come along with me and enjoy yourself. You'll need to have this fish in your ear.
I beg your pardon? What the devil's that?
Listen, it might be important.
What?
It's the Vogon captain making an announcement on the PA.
But I can't speak Vogon.
You don't need to. Just put the fish in your ear. Come on, it's only a little one.
Captain Abbott, the time. Message repeat. This is your captain speaking, so stop whatever you're doing and pay attention. First of all, I see from our instruments that we have a couple of hitchhikers aboard our ship. Hello, wherever you are. I just want to make it totally clear that you are not at all welcome. I worked hard to get where I am today, and I didn't become captain of a Vogon constructor ship simply so that I could turn it into a taxi service for degenerate freeloaders. I have sent out a search party, and as soon as they find you, I will put you off the ship. If you're very lucky, I might read you some of my poetry first. Secondly, we are about to jump into hyperspace for the journey to Barnard's Star. On arrival, we will stay in dock for a 72-hour refit, and no one's to leave the ship during that time. I repeat, all planet leave is cancelled. I've just had an unhappy love affair, so I don't see why anyone else should have a good time. Message ends.
Charming, these Vogons. I wish I had a daughter so I could forbid her to marry one.
You wouldn't need to. They've got as much sex appeal as a road accident. And you better be prepared for the jump into hyperspace. It's unpleasantly like being drunk.
Well, what's so unpleasant about being drunk?
You ask a glass of water.
Ford?
Yes?
What's this fish doing in my ear?
Translating for you. Look under Babel Fish in the book.
What's happening?
We're going to hyperspace.
Ugh. I'll never be called to return for today.
The Babel fish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing all unconscious frequencies and then excreting telepathically a matrix formed from the conscious frequencies and nerve signals picked up from the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you can instantly understand anything said to you in any form of language. The speech you hear decodes the brainwave matrix. Now, it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could evolve purely by chance that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, said man, the Babel fish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It proves you exist, and so therefore you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Oh, that was easy, says man, and for an encore he proves that black is white and gets killed on the next zebra crossing. Most leading theologians claim that this argument is a load of dingo's kidneys, But that didn't stop Ulan Kalufid making a small fortune when he used it as the central theme of his best-selling book, Well, That About Wraps It Up for God. Meanwhile, the poor Babelfish, by effectively removing all barriers to communication between different cultures and races, has caused more and bloodier wars than anything else in the history of creation.
What an extraordinary book.
Help me write the new edition.
No, I want to go back to Earth again, I'm afraid, or its nearest equivalent.
You're turning down 100 billion new worlds to explore.
Did you get much useful material on Earth?
I was able to extend the entry, yes.
Now, let's see what it says in this edition, then.
Okay.
Let's see. E. Earth. Tap out the code. There's the page. It doesn't seem to have an entry.
Yes, it does. See, right there at the bottom of the screen, just under Eccentrica Galumbitz, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6.
What, there? Oh, yes.
Harmless.
Harmless? Is that all it's got to say? One word? Harmless? What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Well, there are 100 billion stars in the galaxy and a limited amount of space in the book. And no one knew much about the Earth, of course.
Well, I hope you've managed to rectify that a little.
Yes, I transmitted a new entry off to the editor. He had to trim it a bit, but it's still an improvement.
What does it say now?
Mostly harmless.
Mostly harmless?
Well, that's the way it is. We're on a different scale now.
Okay, Ford, I'm with you. I'm bloody well coming with you. Where are we now?
Not far from Barnard's Star. It's a beautiful place, and a sort of hyperspace junction. You can get virtually anywhere from there. That is, assuming that we actually get there.
What's that?
Well, if we're lucky, it's just the Vogons come to throw us into space.
And if we're unlucky?
If we're unlucky, the captain might want to read us some of his poetry first.
Vogon poetry is, of course, the third worst in the universe. The second worst is that of the Asgoths of Kriya. During a recitation by their poet master Grunthus the Flatulent of his poem Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning, four of his audience died of internal hemorrhaging, and the president of the Midgalactic Arts Novelling Council survived by gnawing one of his own legs off. Grunthus is reported to have been disappointed by the poem's reception and was about to embark on a reading of his 12-book epic entitled My Favorite Bathtime Gurgles when his own major intestine, in a desperate attempt to save humanity, leapt straight up through his neck and throttled his brain. The very worst poetry of all perished along with its creator, Paul Neil Milne Johnston of Redbridge, in the destruction of the planet Earth. Vogon poetry is mild by comparison, and when the Vogon captain began to read, it provoked this reaction from Ford Prefect. And this from Arthur Dent.
Frail Grunt Bugley, thy micturations are to me as plurgled rabble blotches in a lurking bee. Group, I implore thee, my footing turling drones, and hoopsiously drag me with crinkly bindle wordles, for otherwise I will rend thee in the gobble wards with my blurgle crunch, see if I don't. So, earthlings, I present you with a simple choice. I was going to throw you straight out into the empty blackness of space to die horribly and slowly. But there is one way, one simple way, in which you may save yourselves. Now think very carefully. If you hold your very lives in your hands. Now choose! Either die in the vacuum of space, or... Tell me how good you thought my poem was.
Will our heroes survive this terrible ordeal? Can they win through with their integrity unscathed? Can they escape without completely compromising their honor and artistic judgment? Tune in next week for the next exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones starred as The Book. Simon Jones was Arthur Dent, and Geoffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect. Bill Wallace was Prosser and the Vogon Captain, with Joe Kendall as Lady Cynthia Fitzmelton and David Goodison as the Barman. The programme was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Simon Brett, with the assistance of Paddy Kingsland at the Radiophonic Workshop and a small furry creature from the Crab Nebula. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Primary Phase.
Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 90 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. This planet has, or had, a problem, which was this. Most of the people living on it were unhappy for pretty much of the time. Many solutions were suggested for this problem, but most of these were largely concerned with the movements of small green pieces of paper, which is odd because, on the whole, it wasn't the small green pieces of paper that were unhappy. And so the problem remained, and lots of the people were mean, and most of them were miserable, even the ones with digital watches. Many were increasingly of the opinion that they'd all made a big mistake in coming down from the trees in the first place. And some said that even the trees had been a bad move and that no one should ever have left the oceans. And then one day, nearly 2,000 years after one man had been nailed to a tree for saying how great it would be to be nice to people for a change, a girl, sitting on her own in a small cafe in Rickmansworth, suddenly realized what it was that had been going wrong all this time, and she finally knew how the world could be made a good and happy place. This time, it was right, it would work, and no one would have to get nailed to anything. Sadly, however, before she could get to a phone to tell anyone, the Earth was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass, and so the idea was lost forever. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent has escaped from the Earth in the company of a friend of his, who has unexpectedly turned out to be from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse. His name is Ford Prefect, for reasons which are unlikely to become clear again at the moment, and they are both in dead trouble with the captain of a Vogon spaceship.
Sir, Earthlings, I present you with a simple choice. Think carefully, for you hold your very lives in your hands. Now choose. Either die in the vacuum of space, or tell me how good you thought my poem was.
I liked it.
Good.
Oh, yes, I thought that some of the metaphysical imagery was particularly effective.
Yes?
Oh. And, interesting rhythmic devices, too, which seem to counterpoint the,
Counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor of the,
Humanity of the,
Vagonity.
What?
Vagonity.
Vagonity, sorry. Of the poet's compassionate soul, which contrives through the medium of the verse structure to sublimate this, transcend that, and come to terms with the fundamental dichotomies of the other, and one is left with a profound and vivid insight into,
Into whatever it was the poem was about!
Well
done, Arthur. That was very good.
So what you're saying is that I write poetry because underneath my mean, callous, heartless exterior, I really just want to be loved. Is that right?
Well, I mean, yes, yes. Don't we all, deep down, you know?
Well, you're completely wrong. I just write poetry to throw my mean, callous, heartless exterior into sharp relief. I'm going to show you off the ship anyway. Good! Take the prisoners to number 3 airlock and throw them out.
You can't throw us off into deep space. We're trying to write a book.
I don't want to die now. I've still got a headache. I don't want to go to heaven with a headache. I'd be all cross and wouldn't enjoy it.
You can't do this!
Why not, you puny creature?
Oh, why not? Why not? Does there have to be a reason for everything? Why don't you just let us go on a mad impulse? Oh, go on, live a little. Surprise yourself.
You brute!
Don't you worry. I'll think of something.
Resistance is useless!
I woke up this morning and thought I'd have a nice, relaxed day.
Right.
Do a bit of reading, brush the dog.
I know.
Just after 4 in the afternoon and I'm already being thrown out of an alien spaceship 5 light years from the smoking remains of the Earth.
All right, just stop panicking!
Who said anything about panicking? This is still just a culture shock.
Arthur, you're getting hysterical. Shut up!
Resistance is useless!
You can shut up as well.
Resistance is useless!
No, give it a rest. Do you really enjoy this sort of thing?
Resistance is... What do you mean?
I mean, does it give you a full, satisfying life? Stomping around, shouting, pushing people out of spaceships?
Well, they are so good.
They have to be.
But now you come to mention it, I suppose most of the actual minutes are pretty lousy. Except some of the shouting I quite like. Resistance!
Yeah, sure, yes, you're good at that, I can tell. But if it's mostly lousy, then why do you do it? What is it? The girls? The leather? The machismo?
I don't know. I think I just sort of do it, really.
There, Arthur, you think you've got problems.
Yes, this guy's still half-throttling me.
Yeah, but try and understand his problem.
Right, so, what's the alternative?
Well, stop doing it, of course.
Well, doesn't sound that great to me.
Well, wait a minute, that's just the start. There's more to it than that, you see.
I think if it's all the same to you, I'd better just get you both shoved into this airlock and then go get on with some other bits of shouting I've got to do.
I mean, come on, I mean, now look.
Thanks for taking an interest. Bye now.
No, don't do it.
No, listen, there's a whole world you don't know anything about. I mean, here, how about this? Da-da-da-dum. I mean, doesn't that stir anything in you?
Bye. I'll mention what you said to my aunt.
Potentially bright lad, I thought.
We're trapped now, aren't we?
Yes, we're trapped.
Well, didn't you think of anything?
Oh, yes.
Yes?
But unfortunately, it rather involved being on the other side of the airtight hatchway they've just sealed behind us.
So what happens next?
The hatchway in front of us will open automatically in a moment, and we'll shoot out into deep space and asphyxiate in about 30 seconds.
So this is it? We're going to die?
Yes. Except, no. Wait a minute. What's this switch?
What? Where?
No, I was only fooling. We are going to die after all.
You know, it's at times like this when I'm trapped in a Vogon airlock with a man from Beetlejuice and about to die of asphyxiation in deep space that I really wish I'd listened to what my mother told me when I was young.
Why? What did she show you?
I don't know. I didn't listen.
Terrific.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a truly remarkable book. The introduction starts like this. Space, it says, is big, really big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the street to the chemist, but that's just peanuts to space. Listen! And so on. After a while, the style settles down a bit, and it starts telling you things you actually need to know, like the fact that the fabulously beautiful planet Beth Silliman is now so worried about the cumulative erosion caused by 10 million visiting tourists a year that any net imbalance between the amount you eat and the amount you excrete whilst on the planet is surgically removed from your body weight when you leave. So every time you go to the lavatory there, it's vitally important to get a receipt. In the entry in which it talks about dying of asphyxiation 30 seconds after being thrown out of a spaceship, it goes on to say that what with space being the size it is, the chances of being picked up by another craft within those seconds are 2 to the power of 267,709-1 against, which, by a staggering coincidence, was also the telephone number of an Islington flat where Arthur once went to a very good party and met a very nice girl whom he entirely failed to get off with. Though the planet Earth, the Islington flat and the telephone have all now been demolished, it is comforting to reflect that they are in some small way commemorated by the fact that 29 seconds later, Ford and Arthur were in fact rescued.
There you are. I told you I'd think of something.
Oh, sure.
Bright idea of mine to find a passing spaceship and get rescued by it.
Oh, come on. The chances against it were astronomical.
Don't knock it. It worked. Now, where are we?
Well, I hardly like to say this, but it looks like the seafront at Southend.
God, I'm relieved to hear you say that.
Why?
Because I thought I must be going mad.
Perhaps we weren't rescued after all. Perhaps we died.
What's that meant to mean?
When I was young, I used to have this nightmare about dying. I used to lie awake at night, screaming. All my school friends went to heaven or hell, and I was sent to Southend.
Perhaps we'd better ask somebody what's going on. How about that man over there?
The one with the five heads crawling up the wall?
Yes.
Sir, excuse me. Do you know, if this is Southend, there's something very odd about it.
You mean the way the sea stays steady as a rock and the buildings keep washing up and down? Yes, I thought that was odd.
2 to the power of 100,000 to 1 against and falling.
What was that?
Sounds like a measurement of probability. Hey, that couldn't mean... No.
What?
I'm not sure, but it means we definitely are on some kind of spaceship.
Southend seems to be melting away. The stars are swirling. A dust bowl. Snow. My legs are drifting off into the sunset. Hell, my left arm's come off too. How am I going to operate my digital watch now? Ford, you're turning into a penguin. Stop it.
2 to the power of 75,000 to 1 against and falling.
Hey, who are you? Where are you? What's going on? And is there any way of stopping it?
Please relax. You are perfectly safe.
That's not the point. The point is that I am now a perfectly safe penguin, and my colleague here is rapidly running out of limbs.
It's all right. I've got them back now.
2 to the power of 50,000 to 1 against and falling.
Admittedly, they're longer than I usually like them, but...
Isn't there anything you feel you ought to be telling us?
Welcome to the Starship Heart of Gold. Please do not be alarmed by anything you see or hear around you. You are bound to feel some initial ill effects, as you've been rescued from certain death at an improbability level of 2 to the power of 267,709 to 1 against, possibly much higher. We are now cruising at a level of 2 to the power of 25,000 to 1 against and falling, and we will be restoring normality as soon as we are sure what is normal anyway. Thank you. 2 to the power of 20,000 to 1 against and falling.
Arthur, this is fantastic. We've been picked up by a ship with the new infinite improbability drive. This is really incredible, Arthur. Arthur? What's happening?
Ford, there's an infinite number of monkeys outside who want to talk to us about this script for Hamlet they've worked out.
The infinite improbability drive is a wonderful new method of crossing interstellar distances in a few seconds without all that tedious mucking about in hyperspace. The principle of generating small amounts of finite improbability by simply hooking the logic circuits of a Bumblewini 57 submesen brain to an atomic vector plotter suspended in a strong Brownian motion producer say a nice hot cup of tea, were of course well understood, and such generators were often used to break the ice at parties by making all the molecules in the hostess's undergarments simultaneously leap one foot to the left, in accordance with the theory of indeterminacy. Many respectable physicists said that they weren't going to stand for that sort of thing, partly because it was a debasement of science, but mostly because they didn't get invited to those sort of parties. Another thing they couldn't stand was the perpetual failure they encountered in trying to construct a machine which could generate the infinite improbability field needed to flip a spaceship between the furthest stars, and in the end, they grumpily announced that such a machine was virtually impossible. Then, one day, a student who had been left to sweep up the lab after a particularly unsuccessful party found himself reasoning this way. If such a machine is a virtual impossibility, then it must logically be a finite improbability. So all I have to do in order to make one is to work out exactly how improbable it is, then feed that figure into the finite improbability generator, give it a fresh cup of really hot tea, and then turn it on. He did this and was rather startled to discover that he'd managed to create the long-sought-after infinite improbability generator out of thin air. It startled him even more when, just after he was awarded the Galactic Institute's prize for extreme cleverness, he got lynched by a rampaging mob of respectable physicists who had finally realized that the one thing they really couldn't stand was a smart-ass.
5-1 against and falling, 4-1 against and falling, 3-1, 2-1, probability factor of 1-1, we have normality. I repeat, we have normality. Anything you still can't cope with is therefore your own problem. Please relax. You will be sent for soon.
Who are they, Trillian?
Oh, just a couple of guys we picked up in open space. Sector ZZ9, plural Z Alpha.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a very sweet thought, Trillian, but do you really think it's wise under the circumstances? Mm-hmm. I mean, here we are, on the run and everything. We've got the police of half the galaxy after us, and we stopped to pick up hitchhikers. Okay, so 10 out of 10 for style, but minus several million for good thinking, okay?
Zaphod, they were floating unprotected in open space. You didn't want them to die, did you?
Well, not as such, no, but...
Anyway, I didn't pick them up. The ship did it all by itself.
What?
Whilst we were in improbability drive.
That's incredible.
No, just very, very improbable. Look, don't worry about the aliens. They're just a couple of guys, I expect. I'll send the robot down to check them out. Hey, Marvin?
I think you ought to know I'm feeling very depressed.
God.
Well, here's something to occupy you and keep your mind off things.
It won't work. I have an exceptionally large mind.
Marvin...
All right, what do you want me to do?
Go down to number 2 entry bay and bring the 2 aliens up here under surveillance.
Just that?
Yes.
I won't enjoy it.
She's not asking you to enjoy it. Just do it, will you?
All right, I'll do it.
Yeah, good, great. Thank you.
I'm not getting you down at all, am I?
No, no, Marvin. That's just fine, really.
I wouldn't like to think I was getting you down.
No, don't worry about that. You just act as comes naturally and everything will be fine.
You're sure you don't mind?
No, no, it's all just part of life.
Life? Don't talk to me about life.
I don't think I can stand that robot much longer, Zaphod.
The Encyclopedia Galactica defines a robot as a mechanical apparatus designed to do the work of a man. The marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation defines a robot as your plastic pal who's fun to be with. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy defines the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who'll be the first against the wall when the revolution comes, with a footnote to the effect that the editors would welcome applications from anyone interested in taking over the post of robotics correspondent. Curiously enough, an edition of the Encyclopedia Galactica that fell through a time warp from 1,000 years in the future defined the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who were the first against the wall when the revolution came.
I think this ship is brand new, Arthur.
How can you tell? Have you got some exotic device for measuring the age of metal?
No, I just found this sales brochure lying on the floor. The universe can be yours. Ah, and look, I was right. Sensational new breakthrough in improbability physics. As the ship's drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe almost simultaneously. You select your own re-entry point. Be the envy of other major governments. This is big league stuff.
It looks a hell of a lot better than that dingy Vogon ship. This is my idea of a spaceship. All gleaming white, flashing lights, everything. What happens if I press this button?
I wouldn't.
Oh.
What happened?
A sign lit up saying, please do not press this button again.
They make a big thing of the ship's cybernetics. A new generation of Sirius Cybernetics Corporation robots and computers with the new GPP feature.
GPP? What's that?
It says Genuine People Personalities.
Sounds ghastly.
It is.
What?
Ghastly. It all is. Absolutely ghastly. Just don't even talk about it. Look at this door. All the doors in this spacecraft have a cheerful and sunny disposition. It is their pleasure to open for you and their satisfaction to close again with the knowledge of a job well done. Hateful, isn't it? Come on. I've been ordered to take you up to the bridge. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they tell me to take you up to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction, because I don't.
Excuse me, which government owns this ship?
You watch this door. It's about to open again. I can tell by the intolerable air of smugness it suddenly generates. Come on. Thank you, the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation.
You're welcome.
Let's build robots with genuine people personalities, they said. So they tried it out with me. I'm a personality prototype. You can tell, can't you? I hate that door. I'm not getting you down, am I?
Which government owns this ship?
No government owns it. It's been stolen.
Stolen?
Stolen?
Who by?
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Sorry, did I say something wrong? Pardon me for breathing, which I never do anyway, so I don't know why I bother to say it. Oh, God, I'm so depressed. Here's another of those self-satisfied doors. Life. Don't talk to me about life.
No one even mentioned it.
Really? Zaphod Beeblebrox.
And news reports brought to you here on the Sub-Ether Waveband, broadcasting around the galaxy around the clock. And we'll be saying a big hello to all intelligent life forms everywhere. And to everyone else out there, the secret is to bang the rocks together, guys. And of course, the big news story tonight is the sensational theft of the new improbability drive prototype ship by none other than Zaphod Beeblebrox. And the question everyone's asking is, has the Big Z finally flipped? Beeblebrox, the man who invented the pangalactic gargle blaster, ex-confidence trickster, part-time galactic president, once described by Eccentrica Columbitz as the best bang since the big one, and recently voted the worst-dressed sentient being in the universe for the seventh time running. Has he got an answer this time? We asked his private brain care specialist, Gag Halfont.
Well, look, Zaphod's just this guy, you know?
What do you turn it off for, Trillian?
Zaphod. I've just thought of something.
Yeah?
We picked those couple of guys up in... Zaphod, please take your hand off me. And the other one. Thank you. And the other one.
I grew that one specially for you, Trillian, you know that? Took me 6 months, but it was worth every minute.
We picked them up in sector ZZ9, plural Z Alpha. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
On the whole, no.
Well, it's where you originally picked me up. Let me show it to you on the screen. Right there.
Hey, right. I don't believe it.
How the hell did we come to be there?
Improbability drive. We pass through every point in the universe. You know that.
Yeah, but picking them up there is just too strange a coincidence. Ooh. I want to work this out. Computer?
Hi there. I want you to know that whatever your problem, I am here to help you solve it.
Look, I think I'll just use a piece of paper.
Sure thing. I understand. If you ever need...
Shut up.
Okay.
Trillium, listen. The ship picked them up all by itself, right?
Right.
Right. So, that already gives us a high improbability factor. Mm-hmm. It picked them up in that particular space sector, which gives us another high improbability factor. Mm-hmm. Plus, they were not wearing spacesuits, so we picked them up during a crucial 30-second period.
I've got a note for that factor here.
Put it all together, and we have a total improbability of... Well, it's pretty vast, but it's not infinite. At what point did we actually pick them up?
At infinite improbability level.
Which leaves us a very large improbability gap still to be filled. Look... They're on the way up here now, aren't they? Mm-hmm. With that bloody robot. Can we pick them up on any monitor cameras?
I should think so.
And then, of course, I've got this terrible pain in all the diodes down my left side.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've asked for them to be replaced, but no one ever listens.
I can imagine.
Oh, God, I don't believe it.
Well, well, well. Zaphod Beeblebrox.
I don't believe it. This is just too amazing. Look, Trillian, I'll just handle this. Is there anything wrong?
I think I'll just wait in the cabin. I'll be back in a minute.
Oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be so unbelievably cool about it, it would flummox a vegan snow lizard. This is terrific. What real cool. Several million points out of 10 for style.
Well, you enjoy yourself, Zaphod. I don't see what's so great myself. I'll go and listen for the police on the sub-ether waveband.
Right. Which is the most nonchalant chair to be discovered working at? Yeah. Okay.
Glad to be of service.
I suppose you'll want to see the aliens now. Do you want me to sit in a corner and rust, or just fall apart where I'm standing?
Show them in, please, Marvin. Ford, hi. How are you? Glad you could drop in.
Zaphod, great to see you. You're looking well. The extra arm suits you. Nice ship you've stolen.
You mean you know this guy?
Know him? He's... Oh, Zaphod, this is a friend of mine, Arthur Dent. I saved him when his planet blew up.
Oh, sure. Hi, Arthur. Glad you could make it.
And Arthur, this is my...
We've met.
What?
Have we... Hey,
what do you mean you've met? This is Zaphod Beeblebrox from Beetlejuice 5, you know, not bloody Martin Smith from Croydon.
I don't care. We've met, haven't we, Zaphod? Or should I say, Phil?
What?
You'll have to remind me. I have a terrible memory for species.
It was at a party.
I rather doubt it.
Cool it, will you, Arthur?
A party 6 months ago. On Earth. England. London. Islington.
Oh, that party...
Zaphod, you don't mean to say you've been on that miserable little planet as well?
No, of course not. Well, I may have just dropped in briefly on my way somewhere.
What is all this, Arthur?
At this party, there was a girl. I'd had my eye on her for weeks. Beautiful, charming, devastatingly intelligent. Everything I'd been saving myself up for. And just when I'd finally managed to get her for myself for a few tender moments, this friend of yours barges up and says, "Hey, doll, is this guy boring you? Come and talk to me. I'm from a different planet." I never saw her again.
Zaphod?
Yes, he only had the two arms and the one head, and he called himself Phil, but...
But you must admit that he did actually turn out to be from a different planet, Arthur.
Good God, it's her! Tricia McMillan, what are you doing here?
Same as you, Arthur. I hitched a ride. After all, with a degree in maths and another in astrophysics, it was either that or back to the dole queue on Monday. Oh, I'm sorry I missed that Wednesday lunch date, but I was in a black hole all morning.
Oh, God. Ford, this is Trillian. Hi. Trillian, this is my semi-cousin Ford, who shares three of the same mothers as me. Hi. Trillian, is this sort of thing going to happen every time we use the infinite improbability drive?
Very probably, I'm afraid.
Zaphod Beeblebrox, this is a very large drink. Hi.
Will our heroes be able to enjoy a nice relaxed evening at last? How will they cope with their new social roles? Will they survive the deadly missile attack, which is launched on them 3 minutes into the next episode? Find out in next week's exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book.
Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, and Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefate. Stephen Moore was Marvin, Mark Wing Davey, Zaphod Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Bill Wallace, the Vogon captain, and David Tate, the Vogon guard and computer. The programme was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Jeffrey Perkins, with the assistance of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. And it'll be repeated through a time warp on the Home Service in 1951.
Your shipboard computer, and I just want to mention here that we are now moving into orbit around the legendary planet of Magrathea. Sorry to interrupt your social evening. Have a good time.
And thank you so much, everyone, for listening to that installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which wanted to repeat, apparently. Filling in for Cheek and Tongues very briefly as we get ready for our following program. Hope that was to your liking. It is 9 p.m. Universal Sheena time, and I believe that means it is time for Dime Store Radio Theater. So sit back and enjoy. In a moment or two. Yeah, we just gotta... Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just, it's time. Thank you.
Meanwhile, Sheena's Jungle Room and Mid-Valley Mutations proudly present Dime Store Radio Theater! For those who also live in a galaxy long, long ago, and far, far away, today is an important day in fandom, as people gather all over the world to appreciate the things related to this group of rebel ne'er-do-wells who are just out to stop fascism, no matter where it rears its ugly head. We would like to help you celebrate this important occasion here on the radio by bringing you a historic piece of the past, and a major influence on one of the biggest sci-fi series that has ever come to the big screen. Today we will hear a variety of stories from the 1935 Flash Gordon radio series, beginning with the very first episode, On the Planet Mogo.
Presenting for the first time in radio the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon and Dale Arts. These thrilling adventures come to you as they are pictured each Sunday in the Comic Weekly, the world's greatest pictorial supplement of humor and adventure. The Comic Weekly, now printed in 32 tabloid-sized pages, each page in full four colors, is distributed everywhere as a part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Racing high above the Earth, comfortably seated in a giant airliner, Flash Gordon, internationally famous athlete, looks admiringly across the aisle at Dale Arden, the lovely young companion of his air voyage. The minds of both are intent on the terrible destruction which for many months has been approaching the Earth with terrific speed. The new planet hurtling through space directly in the path of the Earth. Suddenly there's a violent jar. The plane lurches into a spinning nosedive. Flash Gordon's trained muscles carry him across the aisle to the frightened girl. He gathers her in his arms and leaps free of the falling plane, and pulling the ripcord of his parachute, glides to Earth.
Don't be frightened, Dale. The plane has crashed, but we're safe.
Yes, thanks to you.
Hold fast. We're landing now. Careful. Easy. There. Are you all right, Dale?
Yes.
Good, good.
Oh, look, Flash. There's a round steel tower. Where can we be?
Why, that's the laboratory of the great scientist, Dr. Hans Zarka. Why, he's coming this way. I'll call to him to help us. I hope you'll pardon us for breaking in on you so unceremoniously, Doctor, but you see, we had to bail out.
I know you for what you are, spy, come to steal my secret. But I have the answer to that. Come with me.
Put that gun away, Professor Zarkov. The man is mad, Dale. We'll have to humor him. All right, Professor. All right, we'll come with you.
Step down this ladder into this tower. Down, I say.
All right, all right.
There now, we are in my rocket ship, and in 10 seconds we will be on our way to the new planet. We will all die. Die for science.
Oh, Flash, the doctor is mad. This rocket ship is rushing away from the Earth with the speed of light. Right into the path of the new planet.
Hold tight, Dale. We'll escape somewhere.
To the new planet. To the new planet. We three will save the Earth.
Dr. Zarka, there's still time to bring your rocket ship out of the path of the new planet.
No.
what will you gain for science if we're all killed in the crash?
I know who you are, Flash Gordon. The world's greatest athlete. But your trained strength will not save you. Only my mind, the mind of Zarkov, his scientist, can save you. Can save any human soul upon the Earth.
Be careful, Flash. He's reaching for the controls.
Stand aside, Dr. Zarkov.
Feel it. The gravitation pull of the new planet. We crash in 5 seconds.
Rocket ship hits the planet. Dr. Zarkov and Dale are thrown from the rocket ship unconscious. Flash is thrown clear of the wreckage and lands on his feet uninjured. He rushes to the side of the unconscious girl, picks her up, and starts to carry her toward the distant towers of a city on this weird new planet. Suddenly, strange soldiers armed with ray guns appear, and capturing Dale and Flash, force them to come with them to the throne room of Ming the Merciless, Emperor of Mongo and Supreme Ruler of the Universe.
O thou exalted Ming, most merciless majesty of Mongo, supreme ruler of all the peoples of the new planet, thy slave Talusi.
Slave, sing for what the earth people.
Thy slaves obey, O Ming the Merciless.
Take your hands off me.
I'm no slave. I'll meet your emperor as a free man and an equal.
So, Earthman, you are a free man and my equal. Throw him to the red monkey man in the arena. I would be forced with this free man, my equal.
There is thy freedom, Earthman. Now you go into the arena to meet the red monkey men of Mongo.
Don't worry, Dale. Emperor Ming, I'll show you that I, a free man from the Earth, am more than a match for your brainless red monkey men. Flash reaches the bottom step leading to the arena. He leaps and swings at the nearest red monkey man. Then, grasping the falling man-beast under the armpit, Flash whirls him around as a flail, knocking the others in all directions. Emperor Ming, fearing that his monkey men will all be killed, orders his soldiers to destroy Flash with their ray guns. In the midst of the confusion, Princess Aura, the beautiful young daughter of Emperor Ming, calls to Flash.
Quick, brave Earthman, this way, here to my balcony.
Flash leaps to the royal balcony and joins the gorgeously jeweled princess, who commands the slaves to keep back, while she takes Flash through a secret door and into a passage leading to a private elevator. The two get in, and Aura closes the door and presses the switch. Who are you, beautiful maiden?
I am the Princess Aura.